Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here again this week. And today I'm in sunny, sunny Hawaii, which is a lot of fun. And we are going to, instead of splitting our show up this week, we're going to spend the entire hour on green innovation. And I'm really excited to bring our guest on in a minute. For those of you who'd like to call in, you can call in at 347-945-5428. I'm hoping you're enjoying the weather if you're in the United States, depending on pretty much most, many areas are good right now. So today we are going to talk about green innovation and how you can incorporate green from the get-go. If you're building a home, from everything, all the way from choosing your home, building your home before it's built, buying furniture, designing, just the list is going to go on and on. Travis Whitmire and his partners took a combination of years of expertise in building, developing, creating with sustainability in the forefront and have now developed Blue and Green Innovations, which is, we've got a lot to talk about today. So, and he's the expert. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Travis Whitmire.
Well, hey, Natalie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
So much.
So thrilled to have you today. So we've got, it's early here in Hawaii compared to some of the other areas, right? So starting early here. Have you weathered the storms the last few weeks?
I suppose I've done as well as most people, which means that we had some minor flooding, but I definitely don't think we got hit as hard as, say, Dole Cannery or other places that were completely underwater. So, you know, our place down in Mapunapuna, the neighborhood actually goes below sea level during high tide and a heavy storm, but I just happened to have picked a location on a corner where I'm above all of that, so I'm watching, you know, cars go through 2 feet deep of water on all sides, but thankfully we're above it. So we did pretty good at our facility.
Wow, that's fantastic. Because that's Mapunapuna goes down. That's fantastic. Waikiki.
Multiple hurricanes in a row. So, we didn't know what to expect. Were you on island when any of this happened?
Not in the last few weeks, no. I was missing it. I kept getting told about how humid and everything was, but no.
You missed it.
But, you know, I'm really glad that the true, true big danger really missed the islands, you know, which we were so lucky to not have that, you know.
Well, I think it's interesting because every time they come, you see a couple different parties, let's say, different groups of people. There's those that are preparing and saying, okay, maybe I just got here or maybe I'm taking this serious. And then there's everybody else who says, oh, another false alarm. But I just look at what's happening and say, well, you never know. We are right in the middle of a hurricane alley here, and it's happened before, and it's likely that it would happen again. So, yeah, we definitely try to take care of everything we can in advance. I don't want to be rushing to the store the night before to buy gas and rice. So we were ready.
And toilet paper. See, you know, Kawhi seemed to get Hawaii gets with Aniki, right? Years ago, Kawhi was is kind of more in the past, but it's been amazing how much we keep missing. But I've noticed there's a lot more humidity now, you know, and one thing that I never used to see years ago here was lightning. And we're talking back in probably, you know, 2002 and before. I mean, if I had to guesstimate the years. And it's interesting because now we do see more lightning. I don't know if you've noticed.
Well, and I think that almost every auntie uncle that I talk to brings up the point that, hey, it's never seen it this hot, never felt it like this. We've not, so many different changes. And it's a perfect segue to roll into
exactly
what we're focused on as a company. And I'm not going to go down the street of saying there is or there isn't global warming. I think that there's lots of people that argue that either way, and I just simply don't want to spend my time there. But we can say that there has been change, and if things are moving in different directions, better to be prepared than not, right?
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree totally, and that's what I think you've started doing for quite a while. And well, when it comes to Hawaii, people that are here. For example, the lightning and thunderstorms on the mainland, it was pretty commonplace, and you would get the muggy summers where we didn't have that here. We get still trade winds and breezes unless we had Kona winds. And for our listeners who don't know what Kona winds are, that's when there isn't any wind, right? Basically, it's real still. And but I remember years ago when I first was moving back in 99. And after living here as a child, people would go and get in the water when the storm was coming. I was like, "What are you doing? You could get electrocuted. What are you doing?" They're like, "What are you talking about? We're fine." And I realized it was because you didn't have the lightning and thunder that now we're starting to get, which of course brings more storms. So yeah, it's a perfect segue into what you've done and what you're doing, in how we need to really create sustainability and think about the future, because things have changed all over the world. But you know, before we get into that, I just want to tell us a little bit about, because you are an interesting person. I've known you for a while, and I had the pleasure of dealing with you in the building business with you using our menu program. So you, we first met through you building and developing. And so tell us about your background and history and how you came to, even from the beginning, wanting to get into the green sustainability.
Well, you know, you mentioned interesting and being an interesting person, and I don't think it's fair for me to take full credit for that. I do look at life as an opportunity to fill your time with your interest, and the more interest you have or the more you delve into a particular interest, the more interesting you become and are to other people. So if I were to say the start of any of that would be my parents keeping me involved in interesting things. So thanks, Mom and Dad. As far as how I got into the business we're in right now, like you said, we started doing business together many years ago. And, you know, as life happens and there are events that lead to other events, at one point I found myself involved in real estate. And that was actually a transition from a previous career as a musician, a full-time musician. And when I don't know if I've ever told you that, but I know that.
No, I didn't know that. No, I didn't know. That's interesting.
Well, the whole—I guess without going too far back and trying to keep a little more current—I was fortunate enough to be accepted into the Musicians Institute, and I had a dream to go there my whole life. And I applied and was accepted, and I probably had about $3.50 to my name, and I had no idea how I was going to go, no idea how I was going to pay for it. I just knew that that was what I was supposed to do. And as life would have it, an opportunity fell into my lap by way of the home that I was renting was going to be sold. The owner of the home had cancer. He was actually a priest at a correctional facility, and he had owned the property for 15 years. And he said, "You know, you guys are a young starting family. If you'd like, I could sell you guys the home." And had no idea how that even worked. Had no idea what an escrow was, or, you know, that there was actually a sales agent and a buyer's agent. We didn't know, we were as green as could be. This is back when I was, oh gosh, this would have been 1998, I believe. And so we said, okay, sure, we'd like to buy it. And so he sold it to us for what he bought it for. 15 years previous. So there was all of this, you know, amazing equity in the property. And to make a long story short, we were able to paint a couple window seals and change the toilet out. And in 1 month's time, we put up our sale sign in the front yard and had three offers in 2 hours, and ended up just doing the same thing a block over and paid my way through music school. So then that's when I started my musical career. Is pretty much became full-time as soon as I finished from school. I went back into that. And, you know, that was in California, and I did well with the music for a while. But what happened was, after I sold those homes, I went to school and came back, and I was like, wow, I can't even afford to live where I grew up. The homes are so expensive. What am I going to do? And I had some friends on the Big Island, and they're like, hey, you should come over here and look for something. You could probably afford something over here. So I sold quite a few instruments that I'd acquired over all of the years and had enough money for a down payment on a house. And I said, well, if I'm going to invest in real estate somewhere, it's going to be somewhere where I would actually be okay situating myself if I had to be. So I looked at two places. I looked at Oregon and Hawaii. And as I had family in Hawaii, my mom grew up in Hawaii, it was a logical choice. So came over and got a place. To make a long story, hopefully not.
Wow,
short,
I love it.
I ended up buying a house and remodeling it and renting it out and pulled some equity. And I started an art gallery on the Big Island. And that just kind of started a series of events where, through that art gallery, I was given an opportunity by the landlord to renovate the entire space. And he paid for all of the materials and credited all of the lease payments for all of the hours worked, which was an amazing experience because I was acquiring tools. He was paying for the tools, and I was given the opportunity to have a paid learning curve. So traditionally in the construction industry, you got to go work for somebody for many years and work your way up and here sweep, here, you know, here sand, here cut. But
right.
That was something, it was a huge space. So it required kitchens, bathrooms. We built an apartment upstairs. We, you know, did all kinds of exterior work. And it was, you know, about 9 months worth of work. And through that, I was cutting my teeth unknowingly in the construction world at the same time operating a business with the art gallery. So the whole point was to that was, you know, after I had to come over to Hawaii to finish up the renovation of the house I bought, it was not practical to jump back into the world of professional music here in Hawaii. It just it would have taken too long, I thought. And I was actually traveling back and forth almost every other week, and I was being away from my family quite a bit. And I said, well, this isn't the life that I wanted. I just had a young son. So it's so interesting how it just sort of unfolded. And the next thing you know, I'm music school into real estate into entrepreneurship into construction. And then as time passed, I was looking at other opportunities, and we moved over to Oahu and started a small construction business. And we came over to actually take care of some family over here. And really, I had not had a construction business, and I was pretty new to it. But through these years of being a professional musician and then running the art gallery, we're gaining skills in the business world. So I was able to parlay that over into the world of construction. And what started off as changing a couple doors and windows rolled into, a wall. And next thing you know, a wall turns into an addition turns into a house. And in 6 months' time, after moving here, I started with, maybe $1,000, and was able to save up enough money to buy a house. And then put a down payment on a house. Somebody that had a home they needed to sell on an agreement of sale. They had a family emergency. So I think about $50,000 I saved up, and I was able to put that into this property. And that was really the start of real estate here on Oahu back in, you know, the early 2000s. And ever since then, it became more of a focus on real estate, and the construction skills and management and all that just kept building upon itself. And through the time, as we were handling the construction, we added in all of the other various aspects of a development. So then after the construction came the architecture and design, which we were handling in-house. And then we started doing the materials procurement. About the same time, I started going over to Indonesia, and we were able to invest in a couple of properties over there. So then it was just a matter of connecting the dots between...
You actually bought properties in Indonesia?
Yeah. And as we did that, I was sending materials back for projects here. And then, to round it all off, we were then, as you know, taking on the responsibility of selling the homes. And that required at some point to start staging the homes. So with our connections in Indonesia, we were able to then merge our exporting of building materials with furnishings and bring in the furnishings to stage our homes, which then the light bulb went on again. It's just, hey, we have all of these homes. We're staging furniture. We can sell this furniture. And as at the same time we're marketing the furniture, it markets the home. So it was just a double marketing opportunity. And what we found was that every home we sold, for the most part, sold with all the furnishings. People liked the furnishings. So there was, merit to our designs and our interior designs as well. So as we came to the close of a final operating cycle a couple of years ago, we saw that the market was changing and it was becoming increasingly more difficult to acquire subcontractors and whatnot. So that was just, just another moment where we said, this difficulty could be an opportunity. And we're realizing that as the market's shifting, that now after almost a decade of doing all of these services from what then became a raw product to all the way to an end user, we could take and provide those services to other people. So we just basically put a name on our brand, umbrella of services, and started to roll it out about a year and a half ago.
And that's Blue and Green Innovations.
Absolutely. And what Blue and Green Innovations ended up being was five separate divisions of products, imports, architecture, design, properties, and smart technology. So it's just segmenting everything we've already done so that we could offer these separate, different genres or different scopes to the
right.
Individual clients. So it's like an a la carte menu. You can choose some or all of the items. But we do a complete supply chain from beginning to end now.
Well, so you got Blue and Green Innovations, you were actually even with the building taking land in raw land in Hawaii and doing CPRs, right? You were getting in and taking it from that stage all the way through. So anyone could come to you just with the idea in mind before they've even started on any aspect of building, right? Or
We were able to find a lot of great deals where either there would be, I would say the best deals that we had found typically had a house on it with extra excessive land that we were able to then build another home on. And that allowed us to because we were able to have a project going at the same time we're doing all of the development for the other. So you're not just sitting idle waiting, because typically if you buy land, you have to entitle the land, or you have to go through and do the development aspects of permitting and infrastructure if there isn't any. So that takes a lot of time. And if you're depending on how you acquired the land, whether it was through a loan or private money or partners or whatever, just in the end of the day, time is money. And if you're looking at your overall cost, the more that you can spread that cost out, or the more that you can shorten the time on anything, generally the better. And so when we found property with a home already on it, it was easy, because we could be working on the original home, whether it was selling it as is or fixing it up, and then marketing it and selling it. We were able to move that and then many times pay off the majority of the loan that we would have on the property up front. So then when we're working
make
on
a profit.
Plus when we're working on the rest of the property, we don't have that same pressure, that time cooker going, right?
Right.
Because we've reduced the debt considerably on the property. And that seemed to just be a successful formula that we would repeat over and over again through the years. And that pretty much brings us current, I would say, with what blue and green is, but not necessarily why it is. You know, we have the what and the how, but I think even more importantly is the why, right?
Right. The why is so important.
Like I said, we noticed that there was a trend where there was more of a need for the services that we were providing. But at the same time, we also saw that there was a need internally for us to be a part of something that where we felt we were making a larger contribution. And whether that was at home or locally, regionally, or globally. So as we're seeing a changing trend in a real estate market, we're also seeing a changing trend in global markets. And in particular, throughout all my travels, I became more and more interested in world affairs and current events. And obviously, as you travel the world, you stay somewhere for a few days and you have vested interest and you start reading the papers and seeing what's going on. And just you realize that it's more of a global economy, and we're all tied together in more ways than you would think. And one of my concerns was that we're seeing this massive migration of rural populations moving into urban environments, and we're seeing a huge shift of billions of people moving from one way of life, an old way of life, let's just say a way of life that where they have a light footprint into urban environments where they're becoming massive consumers in the way that the West has been for years. And we're not talking about, you know, tens of millions of people over many decades migrating and becoming consumers. We're talking about billions of people moving rapidly and consuming at a rate with exponential growth in ways that we've never seen. And that became a great concern of mine as I'm seeing, hey, the way that we use products, the products that we use, the way that we harness energy and the way that we store energy, all of these things are based off of finite terms. So in essence, I saw too many hands reaching into a cookie jar with not enough cookies to share. And it became a major concern for the world my children would be growing up in. And we said, what can we do about this? How can we take what we see and contribute in a way where we can say at the end of the day, we're doing good, or we have done something that hopefully changes the paradigm of the way that we use products and services, but also hopefully paves a way through stimulating interest in other people and through interesting innovations where we're not moving down that path of what I would say was potential for world conflict, right? I mean, if we
right.
see major nations all fighting for a finite resource and all of these same nations consisting of billions of people all becoming first world consumers, it's just the writing's on the wall. So that in essence became the basis for everything that Blue and Green Innovations has become, which is we have identified a problem and we wanted to provide a solution. And we did that by, I guess, holding up the solution as a litmus and saying, is there value to what we're adding? And we believe there is. And by adding that value, and having a vision that we can
That's
add value.
I was just thinking, because you're such a visionary and being entrepreneurial, and you look at that and you have that vision in front of you, and then you've been able to chunk down every single part of what you've done and bring it to the forefront. That's just fantastic, and you've kept it and stayed with it. And now, isn't it?
Well,
it's amazing to have a vision and then see it materialize.
We had a plan, so it was very methodical in the sense that we've identified the problem, and to come up with a solution or the plan, so to speak, we realized, well, we need to have a legacy to stand up, and the legacy is telling us, hey, we're involved in something that has purpose. And that purpose is our driving force. And with that purpose, we then are passionate about what we're doing. And then when we can infuse that passion into our purpose and our vision, then we know that we're on a path to success. And so it was all laid out nicely. And not to say that, you know, rolling out five divisions and branding and becoming open to the public, so to speak, is without issues or struggles. But at the very least, it's been with a purpose, and that makes, you know, for the most part, everything worthwhile.
I think that makes us sticks with it, doesn't it? I want to, for our listeners, Travis, can you give us your contact information? It's blueandgreeninnovations.com, but on Oahu, you're in Honolulu. Just some information so that our listeners. This is Travis Whitmire, and we're on Realty Universal Radio.
Sure. So blueandgreeninnovations.com is all one word, and we actually have a brick-and-mortar facility at 619 Mapunapuna. So 619 Mapunapuna is actually on the corner of Mapunapuna and Kilihau, right next to the Infiniti dealership across from the Harley-Davidson. So if you know that area at all, over by Harbor, Hawaii, we're right down at the end of the street closest to the airport, and we're generally open on Saturdays and by appointments only. And if you'd like to call, you can reach us at 426-5879. And that will get you in contact with myself or any of the other members of our team.
426-5879?
Yes.
And that's area
and
code 808.
Yes.
And they're 10 minutes from the airport, the Honolulu airport, too. Which is, it's fantastic. So let me tell us foundational sustainability. Is that basically from the ground up tied in with the building and the living, or just incorporates everything? If you tell us a little bit about the foundation sustainability, how you would step through it with somebody if
okay.
they're coming to you and saying, hey, I want to build, I want to buy, and I'm in a certain budget too.
Well, and it's interesting, you mentioned building, but really what Blue and Green Innovations aims to do and aims to be is to be involved in an innovative process that shares this vision. And the vision is that we need to be aware as consumers what we demand and where we place our dollar, so that we can ensure that we are moving towards a path where we are steering ourselves away from the dependency of the finite resources. I mentioned that could potentially create a lot of conflict amongst nations and in the world. And in order to do that, we're looking at not just building or not just environmental issues, but we put it all under the umbrella of a social, economic, and ecological paradigm. So it's all three of these, what I like to call the pillars of a community or of society, all working together in conjunction that create a true sustainability. Because if we look at the environment, well, I've traveled extensively through third world countries for my entire adult life. And one thing I've seen time and time again is that when you travel to a third world country and you see people, whether they're taking and doing deforestation, whether they're polluting the waters, whether they're clear cutting, whatever it is, for the most part, it's revolving around an economic situation and a social situation. So socially, either they're not educated, they're not aware, or they just don't have the means to make that choice because they're looking to survive another day. And when you're talking about surviving
right.
another day, telling someone not to cut down a forest because in 10 or 15 or 20 years, bad things will happen, they don't
right.
have the luxury of living with foresight. So we really have to tie in all of these different aspects that make a community strong and sustainable. And I believe that the more sustainable that the individual can point his family, then that can stimulate the community, which in turn then puts us on a platform or the foundation where we're able to raise other nations up. And so it's a raw product to end user, individual to global community concept, where through sustainability, we're able to level the playing fields out to where we can raise the quality of living and the standard of living of these nations in poverty, these nations where people are not educated, where they don't have the basic means of survival. And, you know, that's only going to happen with sustainable practices.
So are you looking for people, businesses and individuals who are interested in producing, manufacturing, selling or buying the goods and services? Are you looking for people to also contact you that are interested in getting on board?
Well, that's what we do is we vet all the raw products that are a part of our supply chain. So by traveling to these other nations and meeting with the people that own the facilities, by ensuring that there are fair trade practices, ensuring that the materials that we get are produced in a way that is ecologically sensible. Then we know that as we're part of that supply chain, as part of the end using user, that we can, again, just demand that, and that becomes the norm. And so to answer your question about which companies contact us, it's interesting because we're actually having a sustainable luxury lifestyle event on September 17th at our facility from 6 to 9. And the focus of that event is exactly what you talked about, which is whether it's business to business or business to end user, we're looking to create a platform or foundation where we're able to connect entities and or individuals that make, produce, or provide sustainable products and services to the end users. So I look at it as a three-tiered or three-step groupings of obviously the very first people that touch the raw product and make something of use. And generally that's something like machinery or packaging or whatnot. So then there's that first leg. So that's very important that those products are made sustainably. And as we then parlay that over into the second group, it would be those that actually produce a final product. And then finally would be the end user. And what we're looking for is a way to where those that have the interest in sustainability are connecting with other individuals in sustainability so we can create more supply chains from beginning to end. And that's how we envision this starting, or continuing. I mean, it's not a brand new concept, but certainly there's a lot of room for growth. And interestingly enough, this all came out of a concept from real estate, which is we saw the raw product and our grand vision, it was to plan out you could say a mini community where from the raw product, everything was sustainably extracted. And
green,
at that point,
it's basically all green, right?
Sustainable,
under the list of green.
Yeah, sustainable, like for instance, if we're talking about, say, a building material like walls, we want to build walls. So one way you could build walls is with a method called soot panels, so structurally insulated panels. Well, one of the ways you can make these structurally insulated panels or these soot panels is with an OSB board, an oriented strand board. Well, the actual plans, the trees for these OSB board are grown in such a way where, yes, you're harvesting the lumber, but they grow at such a rate that they're sustainable, meaning that you can grow them up quick, which means that you're actually producing a means to clean the oxygen. So it's actually... It's sustainable in this entire process. So that's why we would support a product like that. So in nature, if somebody were to come to us and say, yes, we're interested in sustainability, then one of the things we'd go over is, hey, would you ever consider using structurally insulated panels as a means to build your home? The methods on which we produce the materials are very sustainable. And then the closed cell form foam inside all of the panels doesn't produce the off gases. I mean, on and on. And that's could be a topic for a whole show in itself. But,
It's very interesting, though, because people don't think about it. You know, you heard about the panels, the walls that used to be, I think they used to put them in mobile homes and trailers or some prefab homes, and they were poisonous, basically. Nobody even realized it, you know? So I think what you're saying is so important.
And you saw like a lot of the drywall coming over from China was toxic. I mean, and on and on. So that's why if we're going back to our concept for our community, which was raw product transportation to a facility that was built with materials that were sustainable, with sustainable building practices or production methods, which would then transport the manufacturer goods to a service retail center that was an entire center of green sustainable products servicing a subdivision of homes built all with sustainable practices and sustainable materials. So basically it's a closed loop sustainable system where everything was cradle to cradle. And the whole reason for this was not necessarily that we were going to go and build cities from beginning to end with this entire supply chain. It was more so that when we were developing a product, we could look at that product and say, hey, does this product fit in to this scheme or this operating cycle? Does it fit into this end-to-end or cradle-to-cradle concept of sustainability? Because if it doesn't, then it's not truly sustainable. But if it does, that's great, because the whole concept there was that we're building things that are going to be relevant in 20 years, 30 years. We feel as though so many things that we do are retrograde, meaning that we're building backwards to fit with everything that's always been done, which means that at any point in time, the greatest that we could hope for is that we're currently relevant as per 30 or 40 years ago. And
right.
That's not forward thinking. We're looking at how can we straddle now with the wisdom and knowledge of what happened in the past, but looking towards the future to see how this could fit into something where we're not stifled or limited because of the way that we did it now. And hence the innovation aspect of our name, right?
No, I love it. I love it. Well, think back. I mean, we think back like asbestos, right?
Yes.
You know, formaldehyde, different products that were in a lot of things that I don't know that at the time people really knew were bad, you know, and now we know, you know, for moving forward that things are bad and they're trying to be much safer and safer. So the eco-friendly products, I mean, is there a way to know that, hey, Natalie, hey, everybody out there, these definitely are safe? I mean, these are definitely not going to come up with some problem in the future. I mean, is it standing the test of just natural versus natural? I'm not sure how to phrase that question, but you know what I mean.
No,
I
do know what you mean, and how I look at it is that you can use science as a means to determine the factuality in real time, meaning is the best educated guess you can make with the current information you have. And
okay.
I rarely believe that anything is 100% factual because I just don't know how you ever know if you have all of the facts. I mean, you could always think you
do.
Agree. So, and saying that something is absolutely fail-safe, I'd say generally speaking, just from a practical, logical sense, as far as how my mind absorbs things, the closer
right.
to the source it is, the less that man muddles it up and alters it and manipulates
Agreed.
It, the mm-hmm. more likely it is to be to be harmful or detrimental to the humans and nature around it. I think that if we look at ourselves as biological organisms that exist in nature, and you know, basically, as you're born naked, at that point, you're in all, in essence, an animal
right.
existing with all the other animals in nature. Well, all of the things around nature are meant to give substance and sustainability to the human being. So, again, if we want to say, in my opinion, at the very least, what is the best way to live sustainably? Well, I'd say using products that are manipulated as little as possible and with as little toxins and chemicals and man-made alterations. And that
even comes
then,
over
I mean,
to our food or lifestyle, the way we take care of your – that's amazing. It's amazing. Amazing.
Absolutely.
So let me
– I don't need to – I'm sorry. I don't need to have 50 years of all of science and the most intelligent people in the world to say, hey, if you're born of nature, in nature – and live closer
exactly.
to nature, you'll probably be doing better.
No, I agree with you 100%. And we're finding that now with GMOs and food and manufacturing. I mean, we're finding so many things that are just, you know, that was put on Earth naturally and worked fine, and now we're trying to manipulate too many things. Let me ask you something. On the business side, being based in Honolulu and how expensive everything is in Hawaii when it comes to building – versus some places, are you able to reach buyers and sellers, and there's an affordability index for buyers and sellers, or are most people just stuck many people can afford things, and there's still a huge amount of people that cannot afford the lifestyle that we are. You able to still make that work for people here in Hawaii?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and I think it's expansive in every direction. It permeates into all aspects of all individuals, whether you want to touch on the homeless population, whether you want to touch on the standard of living. And really what we've been doing and where we found ourselves as we follow passions and interests and seeing where we can have a great effect is looking towards the noise or the chatter of the community and saying,
okay,
these are sets of problems. And there seems to be a lot of people complaining about it. But if we're identifying these problems, are we going to be the complainers or are we going to be the doers, the ones that say, hey,
exactly.
we can apply a solution? And we look and we have actually formulated a multi-step plan working with local and state and federal agencies to build relations in a way where we can take and apply our concept of sustainability, that social, economic, and ecological paradigm, as a basis within a solution for the problems that we see. And you mentioned affordability. So the issues that we see right now locally that where we could, let's say, box them or bag them all up together and apply a singular solution. So let's say issues of like would be the affordable housing, the traffic and transportation, the homeless population. And then we look at energy production and as energy as a resource and where we get it from. And then obviously the brain drain and keeping the people with the best interests of Hawaii in Hawaii. And then the job and the income gap. So we look at all of these things as being associated. So you can't solve one problem and leave all the rest. And we see that there's a lot of band-aid approach. I'm sorry?
Well, no, I'm so just saying, for somebody that's...
Well, what I'm saying is that we can't provide one problem without looking at the rest. And that's really where Blue and Green Innovations has been going, is looking at these social issues and saying, how can we provide answers or solutions to these problems, and which way are we most effective? So obviously tying in that supply chain of sustainable-minded companies, whether it's products or services, and that's not limited to building. That's lifestyle as a whole. So we actually have a whole host of different types of vendors who will be attending our event to demonstrate and show their products and services, because we believe in sustainability across the board. And whether that's your clothing or your food or your homes. But where we're looking to really have a great effect is through obviously building and design, because that's where our experience and our background is. So right now we have a lot of interest in providing alternative means, or let's say alternative building methods and practices. So I mentioned six earlier, but we're looking at modular and prefabricated systems. And we're looking at actually some very interesting things: containers, SIPs, pre-approved or pre-permitted structures. And right now there's a new ordinance that just was passed by the City Council for ADUs, and we could talk about that in a minute. But getting to the affordable housing, when we're talking about affordable housing, when I say we, you and I, mentioning affordable housing, at the same time, in my mind, and within the inside of Blue and Green Innovations, we're also thinking traffic, homelessness, energy production, brain drain, because providing a solution for just one thing, it won't help, because if we leave these other things unattended. So we believe that by using a prefabricated or modular building systems, we're able to, just for example, with this one means and method, provide a way to build more effectively in a closed environment, which will allow for lower cost in building, which will allow for everything to be done in less time, which will be efficiency of scale, whether it's through purchasing of the materials, and then also the usage of energy producing these items. So what does that mean? It means that if we're able to basically make something for less, we can offer it for less. So that, in a sense, is an affordable housing solution. But we're also looking at the way that we create these modular and prefabricated systems. So they're using advanced technologies. These advanced technologies will allow for a whole sub-industry, because one of the things we believe is within Hawaii, to deal with some of these problems of affordable housing, and affordable can mean how much a home costs. It's just really only relevant to how much money you make, right? Affordable
No, it's great. We've got about 15 minutes later. We've got to have you back on here another time also, I hope, because it just goes by so fast. I want to ask you this. Somebody wants to build, or even if somebody just wants to renovate their home, or they want to go in and change their lifestyle and start getting in, they can contact Blue and Green Innovations, right? Right away. Can put them in touch or set up a plan. And if somebody wants to build, before they go and start even picking out the lot, before they start picking out the design, they should contact you guys, right? especially in Hawaii.
So we do development consultation. We could do the pre-planning, the horizontal development. We obviously can do the vertical development. We have the architecture and the interior design, and also we're a licensed general contracting entity. We also offer a few new interesting services. And again, these services contribute to the problems that we were talking about earlier. And one of the services that we're involved is we're offering a third-party review process to an affiliate, where this is something that's brand new. The Department of Planning and Permitting has recently given the green light for a offsite or a third-party review of the building and zoning. So this is something that's typically only been allowed in commercial, and at that, they've never been able to do the zoning. So this is a brand new, really interesting thing. What it means is taking your current permitting time of 6 to 9 months, or however long, it could even be longer, and we're able to get that down in less than a month. So it's
really?
A huge reduction in time, which is, as
well,
time
that
is money.
Huge.
That's a huge deal. So, the backlog of DPP is so thick that, it's a great opportunity. Now, that mixed with the ADUs, which I don't think we have time to fully go into, but again, as that was something that was brought about as a solution to deal with some of these other issues within our community. And ADUs, auxiliary dwelling units, and the city council just passed, I think it was, Bill 20, and this is something that allows homeowners who meet a minimum requirement of land size and zoning to either convert an existing structure, a carport, garage, or maybe an illegal non-conforming room into a dwelling unit. And this is to take the place of Ohana units, because Ohana have a stricter guidelines as far as who can use them, how they can be used. So this relaxes many of the requirements, and this is something we see as a game changer. I think there's going to be a surge of people that are going to be wanting this. So interestingly enough, we have the desire, and we're moving in a direction to combine the ADUs with a third-party review with our modular building packages, and we're going to be creating modular, let's say, dwellings off-site that allow for people to have a pre-permitted structure that, with a third-party review, we have to do a cursory review. So we're talking a matter of a couple of weeks. The structure's already pre-permitted, and you'll be able to move that onto your property and have an additional rental income, or have a family member or whatnot moving there. So by combining all of these things, it's a really interesting process, but allows us to, chip away at some of these other issues we see in the society, so that standard of living, so affordable housing. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely super expensive.
I love
it. Amazingly expensive. It's expensive because the amount of money that the average individual makes does not allow the average individual to buy the average home. It's a huge problem. And why? Simple economics, supply and demand. There's more people wanting homes than there are homes available, and that's limited by the land. So that takes us in a whole other direction, which is our support of a vertical urban infill. So that's another place where we're finding ourselves heavily involved, is supporting development in areas where there's already infrastructure and where the general growth plan has already allowed for the development. And this all comes on the back of us of wanting to have the support of the city and county and the state agencies at our back, saying, basically, yeah, we want building to go on here. Building is necessary because we need homes, because more people are being born and or moving here than people dying. So I don't even touch those subjects of should, shouldn't, could, couldn't, because it already is.
Right.
So as it already is, it's like, well, how do we deal with this? Well, we can mow down all of our ag land and build track homes until the cows come home, but that doesn't solve the transportation issue. And if we're looking at making sure that we tie in a solution that encompasses all of these problems that we've identified, we just found that by offering solutions within that vertical infill, the redevelopment, new structures, whatnot,
yeah,
it solves a lot of problems. Keeps people off the road.
You know what I just got a picture
time.
Of? I just got it. When you were talking
about
the ADU ordinance with the auxiliary dwelling, I could just picture those. You heard of those tiny houses they sell, the little teeny tiny houses? They call that
yes,
tiny houses? I could just see, I could see a tiny house development, or I could see a bunch of tiny houses in people's yards. But that's,
well,
that, you know, hey,
we're doing it with containers. So we're using actually shipping containers is a very efficient and very low cost way to, in essence, in a short period of time, be able to have a legal structure on your property. And, you know, we have some interesting design concepts. So I was to put a matching facade on the front after the
wow.
modular component has already dropped down on the property. So, again, just looking at towards solving these problems in an interesting way, that's cutting edge and using new technologies and providing secondary industry to Hawaii so that Hawaii can be a competitor in the world market, not just, you know, taking care of our needs right now, but looking to the future of how the future generations going to sustain themselves. Affordable living now is going to be just as important 20 years. If we don't start chipping away at solving that problem, we're going to be looking at the same problem. So, again,
absolutely.
I think you're getting a feel for where Blue and Green Innovations is coming from, and what we seek to do is not just building a home and not just using a, let's say, a recycled material. It's encompassing the entire lifestyle of the community and tying everyone together so that together we can all solve these problems. And, you know, coming to us and saying, we would love for you to design us a home. We want to be sustainable. Absolutely. We have partners that will do a, you know, 200-point consultation, looking over every aspect of an existing home or within a set of plans to basically switch out everything that's not sustainable with other sustainable items at comparable pricing. You know, using other partners that care about this. Again, it supports us. It's the
wow.
end user demand for these things that is going to drive the market, right? So we're trying
I
to wave
it.
That flag really high and say, hey, let's all demand this. At the point of once we're able to have enough people demanding it, it becomes a commonplace, the price comes down more, and it becomes more accessible to everybody else.
You know, what they say, without a plan, people fail, right? And it sounds like you really have people can come to you and give you what they want, and you're going to create a plan, and you're going to step it through for them, and it just you have all the tools and the experience and
well, funny
all,
that
the, all the components
that.
In part, right? Place.
The I have a little litany that I have my son repeat every night for as long as I can remember, and one of them is failing to plan is trying to fail, and another one is the five P's of success: the proper preparation prevents poor performance, and then one more guiding light that my dad instilled in me a long time ago was a man who stands for nothing will fall for anything. So I think it's important to grab on to something, you know, that you believe in, and you know, have there be a foundation or merit to the beliefs, and then from there, you know, you become let's say enthusiastic about it.
That's fantastic.
Which I think I have been.
And I love it.
I love it.
You know, we're all about, this is Realty Universal Radio. This is Natalie Mullinex, and our guest is Travis Whitmire with Green Innovations, Green Innovations with Blue and Green Innovations. And you can find out more information at blueandgreeninnovations.com. Let's give your phone number again, too.
Sure. Okay. So in Hawaii, that's 808, obviously, and 426-5879. And if I could just say one more
sure.
thing, and that's really what we aim to do is by identifying solutions is create products that in essence are the models or the vehicles that go out into the world and share the vision. So when you're supporting Blue and Green Innovations, you're supporting sustainability across the community and hopefully across the nation. That's what we're promoting. That's what we stand for. And that's what we're providing is let's say almost little commercials that go out into the world. So we're not looking at as our products or the things that we make as the completion or the ending. That's just the beginning. Once we make something and somebody buys it or it's donated or given away or whatnot, only then does it really start to have its true effect, which is going out into the world and sharing that vision and changing the paradigm again or creating an awareness so that we can all be a part of ensuring that we're on the right track to creating a more sustainable future, a better future for our children, not a future of turmoil and conflict as a result of, as I said, too many hands reaching into a cookie jar with not enough cookies to share.
I love it. And it just sounds like you're reaching out to people that so many times people think, well, I can't afford this or I can't afford that or it's not possible. and it is possible, and they need to know that.
It has to be affordable.
Absolutely. Look at how things happen, and it comes back. What you give comes back. Look what you're giving, and it's coming back. And it sounds like throughout your life with what we've heard in the beginning, too, you gave and it came back. You know, it doesn't. It's not an accident when we give that it comes back to us, and these visions come to us. It's. I think I really believe that's on purpose, and each one of us has.
It's a dream, Natalie. Right? It's a dream.
The biggest thing too with the dreams. Yeah, and there's always trials and tribulations, and we won't go into a whole nother show on that. But you know how you keep that dream and you keep the vision, and then, you know, the setbacks come in and this comes in, and the big key is to get back up, keep doing it, keep on, you know?
Are you telling me that dreams are not easy to make happen?
See, it's all there. Yeah, oh, yeah, we're just going to wish upon a star. But you know that vision – when you really keep that vision, it does happen, doesn't it? It starts coming there, you know? But there just takes we have to take some planning and action with it. I guess that's what I'm – it's so fun.
There's and not, bliss in the misery as well. I mean, there's bliss in the misery because you don't have these situations that create obstacles and burdens and struggles, then you probably would never get as far anyways because each and every single one of these little potholes along the way – are just opportunities to grow stronger, to be able to take the next biggest thing that you would never be able to handle. If you think about what you deal with now in life, you've never been able to handle that at 13. There's a reason why life progresses as it does. And I have one more interesting quote. It made me think of when I said potholes. The road to success is littered with many tempting parking spaces. And
Don't quit. So, never quit.
never quit. Live your dreams. Have a dream. If you don't have a dream, get around somebody that does have a dream and become inspired to have a dream, and then make a plan for your dream to a series of goals. And the next thing you know, you're going to have a purpose. You're going to be filled with enthusiasm. You're going to be able to spread that to the rest of the world. And, you know, it's just what makes life livable and bearable and pleasant.
And I really believe, and I mean, this is me saying my God, I'm always saying God about God, but I believe we really are spirits and souls, and God planted that in us, these dreams and this innovation, and we really are one. You know, there's so much energy coming on this small earth, and we can make differences, we can change, and we can grow. And you look at the oak tree didn't get there and stand by accident, you know, and the oak tree still weathers the storm, and you can do it. And, you know, that's the true thing about leadership. And you see a lot of things that were changed and came into innovation didn't happen overnight. And it took perseverance.
Well, I think it's super important what you said is give the glory to God. God first, build your foundation on the strongest thing that there has ever been. God will pave the way for us. And I truly believe that. I take zero credit for anything that I've done or do. I do know that I've made bad decisions, and hopefully those bad decisions lead towards good decisions. And I think that's the key. It's not never making mistakes. It's learning from those mistakes. And I think the best way to, for me at least, to learn from these mistakes is to align myself with the truths of God as the principles within my life and hopefully your life. And
I love
there's
it.
There's nothing more true
than
that.
I heard a thing, they said, and I was like, really? I heard that most successful people and successful projects and things that have come into play failed 50% of the time. And I'm like, really? I was always thinking maybe like 10 times or so. No, 50%. And look at Einstein, how many times he, you know, look at Einstein, what he did, and then look at the the other people that went on over and over and over and created things and just made things, but it didn't happen the first time. So don't quit.
No,
it's been a pleasure, Travis.
Failure. The only failure is when you give up. Success is when you tried one more time, you're succeeding.
I love it. Yep. This is Travis Whitmire with Blue and Green Innovations, and they're having, if you're on Oahu or near on an outer island, you could come in too, September 17th, and it's from, is it 6 to 9?
6 to 9, let's have a stimulating conversation and do great things that allow for the world to be the place it should be.
And Mapunapuna, the address again is?
619 Mapunapuna, right on the corner all the way down towards the airport across from the Infiniti dealership.
Awesome.
If you see that big Harley Davidson, you know you're in the vicinity. And
I'd
love to have you come on in. support sustainability. Why? Because it's going to make the world a better place.
Absolutely wonderful. And I hope to have you back soon and see you soon. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
All right.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.
Okay. Are you there? It's going to hang us up. Okay.
Yeah, the guy, you gave me a number of the guy, Dennis. What does he do? What am I calling?
Okay, are you there? Hey, Travis, are you there?